You can find his work as the National Director for Recruiting for Scout. Keep up on linescout.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at Brandon Huffman. Brandon, really appreciate your time. How are you doing on this recruiting day?
I'm tired, but I know how Santa now feels on Christmas night.
That's brilliant. When we break down games, look at both sides, and a new name surfaces, we always cite where he's from frequently, who rated him, how high. So when your site pumps out a ranking, be it, you know, Bama first and so on, is there a magic formula? What factors do you believe provide the most accuracy?
You know, I think you could look at average star ranking as a part of it, because unfortunately when the scout engineers developed the rankings 15, 16 years ago, they put a high emphasis on bigger classes. So the bigger your class, the more points you got. And I think that's probably not the best way to do it, because it tilts towards quantity, not necessarily the quality. But I think average star ranking gives you a better gauge of just how good your class is, so that if you sign a 12, 13, 14 member class, but it's a very good class like Stanford's was this year, that is what it should skew towards. But I think, you know, you still have kind of the same schools in there no matter if you're basing it on quality or quantity, because sometimes the best schools are signing the biggest classes and the most loaded classes.
Brandon, you look at the team rankings for 2017 and the finish Oregon had with 23 recruits. Are you surprised at all with a new coaching change, a state recruiting base that A, doesn't produce a lot of players, and the ones that were Pac-12 were pretty much locked up to other schools already, and then Oregon's coming off a 4-8 season, that they finished with a better class ranking than Washington? Is that shocking at all?
It's shocking on one hand just because of how dead in the water it looked, especially when Diamador Lenore decommitted, and then Mark Helfrich gets fired a few hours later. It looked like they may lose C.J. Friedel at that time. It didn't look like they were going to get a quarterback in this class. Even at that point, you know, Thomas Graham wasn't all in. And then they end up getting Braxton Burmeister. To me, Thomas Graham was like the real kind of turning point for them. And they built nothing but momentum after that, getting Burmeister to flip, getting the two kids to the National Polynesian Bowl, getting a couple of the kids from Florida. But to keep Jaylon Redd, to keep C.J. Verdell, to get D'Amador back in the boat again, and then to throw in there, you get a four-star offensive lineman like George Moore. I am surprised with how well they closed, just given the fact that Willie Taggart spent the last couple of years on the other side of the country, so he didn't really have a lot of recruiting ties out west, yet they did a good job with these kids in the west.
Now, when Coach Taggart got the job, Brandon, we talked about trajectory. You know, he goes from Western Kentucky, then he becomes an assistant in the FBS, you know, a Power Five at Stanford, then an upgrade as a head coach to South Florida, the American Athletic. And he was the one who kept saying, man, with these facilities, what I could do, having kind of the clout behind him of a major conference kind of successful program. Would you say this was a really good kind of initial splash for a guy who is now moving up the ranks and is now a head coach at a university like this?
Without question. And I'm not saying, and I want people to take note here, I'm not saying he's like Urban Meyer, except for the fact that Urban Meyer did the same thing. He started out at a MAC school, and then at the point he went to Utah, they were in the Mountain West. Then he went to Florida, where he had a, you know, great facility to work with. He had great in-state talent. Now, he had different in-state talent than what Willie Taggart has,
right,
but he went up those same steps at the state time, and he just needed to have a bigger program to sell. And now you're seeing what happens when he can do that in 6 to 8 weeks. What's he going to do when he has 13, 14 months? Because what I also thought was key with what Taggart did was how many offers of 2018 prospects that he made. Especially, there was about 2 weeks ago, he offered a number of kids in Los Angeles and top-end 2018 talent. So it wasn't just about going and shoring up the 2017 class. It was about shoring up their efforts and making that brand known again in Southern California for the 2018 class.
Brandon, you look at the landscape of Pac-12 football, and you're pretty much the godfather of covering the Pac-12 and recruiting aspects, looking at the hires he made, Taggart made, and Joe Salavea, Jim Leavitt, and Keith Hayward, Oregon historically has always had their best athletes, their best recruits, typically land on the offensive side of the football. Those three guys are, in recruiting circles, highly respectable, if not some of the best at their positions. What is your feelings of the staff he's assembled defensively and their ability to recruit and then develop the talent on the defensive side of the ball?
You know, with all due respect to the previous coaches that had been there for a long time, it was probably as good a time as any to bring in some fresh blood and to bring in kind of some new faces here. And I think it was evident in that he was smart enough to know, I got to get guys that have Pac-12 recruiting ties, because even though he coached in the Pac-12 years ago, it had been a while. So what does he do? He goes and hires, except for Keith Hayward being at Louisville for a year, his career had been at Oregon State and at Washington at USC. Leavitt had been at Colorado the last couple of years. Obviously, going to get in Salavea with his success that he had in the Polynesian and the island, and then his success at Washington State, he knew that the defense was the problem for them as a team. He goes and gets good defensive coaches, but also with the added bonus that they're also very good recruiters. They're energetic. I mean, Leavitt is an absolute blast to follow on Twitter because the guy is like completely souped up on Pepsi all the time. I'm a Coke guy, but hey, you know, Pepsi, keep it going. But he just has that energy that I think that they really need. And he, as a head coach before, he knows that recruiting is the pipeline to your success. And I think that's the one advantage to bringing in a head coach like Leavitt, who is energetic, is that he knows that recruiting is just as important as coaching on Saturdays. Then you get Salavea with his knowledge of the islands, and then you bring in Hayward and his being a Los Angeles guy. And that's a big reason they were able to get Dielmer back in the class, is because he started recruiting him 2 years ago. So he really hit a home run with those defensive hires, because not only can they coach those positions, but they understand how crucial recruiting is to making your success on the field.
Talking with Brandon Huffman, scout.com. I want to head down on the farm because I'm consistently amazed by Stanford when you think of what Harbaugh took over 10 years ago. And then this year, they quietly won 10 games again, sixth time in the last 7 years. Cliche or not, David Shaw just keeps bringing in those Stanford guys and winning a lot. What do you make of this class of 2017 for the Cardinal?
I mean, if this isn't the most Stanford class ever, they go and get the top two linemen in the country. They go and get a big athletic tight end like Colby Parkinson. They get the number one quarterback in the country. Every year is the year David Shaw's supposed to leave Stanford and go to the NFL, yet every year he keeps bringing in talent and his recruiting just keeps getting better and better. There's no reason for him to go to the NFL. He's got a machine going at Stanford. He's won 10 games, 5 of his 6 years there. They had a down year this year, quote unquote, and they still won 10 games.
Yep.
What 2 years ago was the only real down year that they had. And what do they do the next year? They win the Rose Bowl and have a Heisman Trophy finalist. So they recruit at such a different pace than everybody else, but it's working and it's continuing to working. And they get those guys in the trenches this year. They get an elite quarterback in Davis Mills that, you know, Shaw's got it going so well there that it's like there'd be no reason for him to go to the NFL. And I'm still waiting for that drop off when Toby Gerhart left and when Harbaugh left and when Andrew Luck left. You know, maybe it's with Christian McCaffrey, but he has shown that drop off is a myth.
USC and their finish, I think they finished with what, five stars in this class. It seems like, especially this year and the last year, they've also been a big thorn in Oregon's side of getting guys late that Oregon was either counting on or hoping to sign. What did you make with this USC class and its impact in particular just against Oregon?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously Oregon had some guys that they were feeling good, or at least that they could make a compelling case for, whether it was Greg Johnson or Joseph Lewis, and certainly with Josh Follow. But this is the one thing I think the Pac-12 has feared, is if SC started to win again on the field, which they hadn't done so much since Pete Carroll left, what would that translate to in recruiting? And remember, after the first four games, everybody wanted Clay Helton's head in yep. USC's fan base, and recruiting was starting to fall apart. They were taking commitments from guys that weren't SC-level recruits. Then they get hot, and I think the entire season for them turned when they beat Washington in Seattle, and then the next day, recruiting-wise, they flipped Jack Sears from Duke, And since then, it's just been momentum on the field, winning the Rose Bowl, and then momentum off the field. And those L.A. kids who were looking to leave and maybe go to Oregon or Nebraska or some of the other places now realize they can stay close to home, they can play for a Rose Bowl, and they can win. And that's not what the other 11 schools in the Pac-12 wanted to see.
You can find his work, scout.com, on Twitter, at Brandon Huffman. He's one of the best in this business, the Santa Claus of recruiting analytics. I know it's been a nutty day for you, sir, but we really, really, really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, take it easy, Brandon.